Chapter 11. By the end of August, Anne was herself again, looking forward to a happy autumn. Small Bertha Marilla grew in beauty day by day, and was a center of worship to adoring brothers and sisters.
"I thought a baby would be something that yelled all the time," said Jem, rapturously letting the tiny fingers cling around his. "Bertie Shakespeare Drew told me so."
"I am not doubting that the Drew babies yell all the time, Jem dear," said Susan. "Yell at the thought of having to be Drews, I presume. But Bertha Marilla is an Ingleside baby, Jem dear."
"I wish I had been born at Ingleside, Susan," said Jem wistfully. He always felt sorry he hadn't been. Di cast it up to him at times.
"Don't you find life here rather dull?" an old Queen's classmate from Charlottetown had asked Anne rather patronizingly one day.
"Dull?"
Anne almost laughed in her caller's face. "Ingleside, dull? With a delicious baby bringing new wonders every day? With visits from Diana and little Elizabeth and Rebecca Dew to be planned for? With Mrs. Sam Ellison of the Upper Glen on Gilbert's hands, with a disease only 3 people in the world had ever been known to have before, with Walter starting to school, with Nan drinking a whole bottle of perfume from Mother's dressing table. They thought it would kill her, but she was never a whit the worse. With a strange black cat having the unheard-of number of 10 kittens in the back porch. With Shirley locking himself in the bathroom and forgetting how to unlock it. With the shrimp getting rolled up in a sheet of flypaper. With Aunt Mary Maria setting the curtains of her room on fire in the dead of night while prowling with a candle and rousing the household with appalling screams. Life dull. For Aunt Mary Maria was still at Ingleside. Occasionally she would say pathetically,
"Whenever you're tired of me, just let me know. I'm used to looking after myself."
There was only one thing to say to that, and of course Gilbert always said it, though he did not say it quite so heartily as at first. Even Gilbert's clannishness was beginning to wear a little thin. He was realizing rather helplessly, manlike, as Miss Cornelia sniffed, that Aunt Mary Maria was by way of becoming a bit of a problem in his household. He had ventured one day to give a slight hint as to how houses suffered if left too long without inhabitants, and Aunt Mary Maria agreed with him, calmly remarking that she was thinking of selling her Charlottetown house.
"Not a bad idea," encouraged Gilbert, "and I know a very nice little cottage in town for sale. A friend of mine is going to California. It's very like that one you admired so much where Mrs. Sarah Newman lives."
"But lives alone," sighed Aunt Mary Maria.
"She likes it," said Anne hopefully.
"There's something wrong with anyone who likes living alone, Anne," said Aunt Mary Maria.
Susan repressed a groan with difficulty. Diana came for a week in September. Then little Elizabeth came. Little Elizabeth no longer. Tall, slender, beautiful Elizabeth now. But still with the golden hair and wistful smile. Her father was returning to his office in Paris, and Elizabeth was going with him to keep his house. She and Anne took long walks around the storied shores of the old harbor, coming home beneath silent, watchful autumn stars. They relived the old windy poplar's life and retraced their steps in the map of fairyland, which Elizabeth still had and meant to keep forever. "Hanging on the wall of my room wherever I go," she said. One day, a wind blew through the Ingleside garden, the first wind of autumn. That night, the rose of the sunset was a trifle austere. All at once, the summer had grown old. The turn of the season had come.
"It's too early for fall," said Aunt Mary Maria, in a tone that implied the fall had insulted her. But the fall was beautiful, too. There was the joy of winds blowing in from a darkly blue gulf, and the splendor of harvest moons. There were lyric asters in the hollow, and children laughing in an apple-laden orchard. Clear, serene evenings on the high hill pastures of the upper glen, and silvery mackerel skies with dank birds flying across them, and, as the day shortened, little gray mists stealing over the dunes and up the harbor. With the falling leaves, Rebecca Dew came to Ingleside to make a visit promised for years. She came for a week, but was prevailed upon to stay too, none being so urgent as Susan. Susan and Rebecca Dew seemed to discover at first sight that they were kindred spirits, perhaps because they both loved Anne, perhaps because they both hated Aunt Mary Maria. There came an evening in the kitchen when, as the rain dripped down on the dead leaves outside, and the wind cried around the eaves and corners of Ingleside, Susan poured out all her woes to sympathetic Rebecca Dew. The doctor and his wife had gone out to make a call. The small fry were all cozy in their beds, and Aunt Mary Maria fortunately out of the way with a headache. "Just like a band of iron round my brain," she had moaned. "Anyone," remarked Rebecca Dew, opening the oven door and depositing her feet comfortably in the oven, "who eats as much fried mackerel as that woman did for supper deserves to have a headache. I do not deny I ate my share, for I will say, Miss Baker, I never knew anyone who could fry mackerel like you, but I did not eat four pieces." "Missed you, dear," said Susan earnestly, laying down her knitting and gazing imploringly into Rebecca's little black eyes. "You have seen something of what Mary Maria Blythe is like in the time you've been here, but you do not know the half, no, nor yet the quarter. Missed you, dear, I feel that I can trust you. May I open my heart to you in strict confidence?"
"You may, Miss Baker."
"That woman came here in June, and it is my opinion she means to stay here the rest of her life. Everyone in this house detests her. Even the doctor has no use for her now, hide it as he will and does. But he is clannish and says his father's cousin must not be made to feel unwelcome in his house. I have begged," said Susan, in a tone which seemed to imply she had done it on her knees, "I have begged Mrs. Doctor to put her foot down and say Mary Maria Blythe must go. But Mrs. Doctor is too soft-hearted. And so we are helpless, Miss Dew, completely helpless." "I wish I had the handling of her," said Rebecca Dew, who had smarted considerably herself under some of Aunt Mary Maria's remarks. "I know as well as anyone, Miss Baker, that we must not violate the sacred properties of hospitality. But I assure you, Miss Baker, that I would let her have it straight. I could handle her if I did not know my place, Miss Dew. I never forget that I am not mistress here. Sometimes, Miss Dew, I say solemnly to myself, 'Susan Baker, are you or are you not a doormat?' But you know how my hands are tied. I cannot desert Mrs. Doctor, and I must not add to her troubles by fighting with Mary Maria Blythe. I shall continue to endeavor to do my duty, because, Miss Dew, dear," said Susan solemnly, "I could cheerfully die for either the doctor or his wife. We were such a happy family before she came here, Miss Dew, but she is making our lives miserable, and what is to be the outcome I cannot tell, being no prophetess, Miss Dew. Or rather, I can tell. We will all be driven into lunatic asylums.
It is not any one thing, Miss Jew. It is scores of them, Miss Jew. Hundreds of them, Miss Jew. You can endure one mosquito, Miss Jew, but think of millions of them.
Rebecca Jew thought of them with a mournful shake of her head.
She is always telling Mrs. Doctor how to run her house and what clothes she should wear. She is always watching me. And she says she never saw such quarrelsome children. Miss Jew, dear, you have seen for yourself that our children never quarrel. Well, hardly ever.
They are among the most admirable children I have ever seen, Miss Baker. She snoops and pries.
I have caught her at it myself, Miss Baker. She's always getting offended and heartbroken over something, but never offended enough to up and leave. She just sits around looking lonely and neglected until poor Mrs. Doctor is almost distracted. Nothing suits her. If a window is open, she complains of drafts. If they are all shut, she says she does like a little fresh air once in a while. She cannot bear onions. She cannot even bear the smell of them. She says they make her sick. So Mrs. Doctor says we must not use any. Now, said Susan grandly, it may be a common taste to like onions, Miss Jew, dear, but we all plead guilty to it at Ingleside.
I am very partial to onions myself, admitted Rebecca Jew.
She cannot bear cats. She says cats give her the creeps. It does not make any difference whether she sees them or not. Just to know there is one about the place is enough for her. So that poor shrimp hardly dare show his face in the house.
I have never altogether liked cats myself, Miss Jew, but I maintain they have a right to wave their own tails. And it is, Susan, never forget that I cannot eat eggs, please. Or, Susan, how often must I tell you I cannot eat cold toast? Or, Susan, some people may be able to drink stewed tea, but I am not in that fortunate class.
Stewed tea, Miss Jew, as if I ever offered anyone stewed tea.
Nobody could ever suppose it of you, Miss Baker.
If there is a question that should not be asked, she will ask it. She is jealous because the doctor tells things to his wife before he tells them to her. And she is always trying to pick news out of him about his patients. Nothing aggravates him so much, Miss Jew. A doctor must know how to hold his tongue, as you are well aware, and her tantrums about fire.
Susan Baker, she says to me, I hope you never light a fire with coal oil or leave oily rags lying around, Susan. They have been known to cause spontaneous combustion in less than an hour. How would you like to stand and watch this house burn down, Susan, knowing it was your fault?
Well, Miss Jew, dear, I had my laugh on her over that. It was that very night she set her curtains on fire, and the yells of her are ringing in my ears yet. And just when the poor doctor had got to sleep, after having been up for 2 nights. What infuriates me most, Miss Jew, is that before she goes anywhere, she goes into my pantry and counts the eggs. It takes all my philosophy to refrain from saying, why not count the spoons, too? Of course, the children hate her. Mrs. Doctor is just about worn out, keeping them from showing it. She actually slapped Nan one day when the doctor and Mrs. Doctor were both away. Slapped her! Just because Nan called her Mrs. Methuselah. Having heard that imp of a Ken Ford saying it.
I'd have slapped her, said Rebecca Jew viciously.
I told her if she ever did the like again, I would slap her. An occasional spanking we do have at Ingleside, I told her, but slapping? Never. So put that in pickle. She was sulky and offended for a week,
but at least she has never dared to lay a finger on one of them since. She loves it when their parents punish them, though. If I was your mother, she says to little Jem one evening, oh, ho, you won't ever be anybody's mother, said the poor child. Driven to it, Miss Jew, absolutely driven to it. The doctor sent him to bed without his supper, but who would you suppose Miss Jew saw that some was smuggled up to him later on? Ah, now who? Chortled Rebecca Jew, entering into the spirit of the tale. It would have broken your heart, Miss Jew, to hear the prayer he put up afterwards, all off his own bat. Oh, God, please forgive me for being impertinent to Aunt Mary Maria. And, oh, God, please help me to be always very polite to Aunt Mary Maria. It brought the tears into my eyes, the poor lamb. I do not hold with irreverence or impertinence from youth to age, Miss Jew, dear. But I must admit that when Bertie Shakespeare threw a spitball at her one day, it just missed her nose by an inch, Miss Jew. I waylaid him at the gate on his way home and gave him a bag of doughnuts. Of course, I did not tell him why. He was tickled over it, for doughnuts do not grow on trees, Miss Jew, and Mrs. Second Skimmings never makes them. Nan and Di, I would not breathe this to a soul but you, Miss Jew. The doctor and his wife never dream of it, or they would put a stop to it. Nan and Di have named their old china doll with the split head after Aunt Mary Maria, and whenever she scolds them, they go out and drown her, the doll, I mean, in the rainwater hogshead. Many's the jolly drowning we have had, I can assure you. But you could not believe what that woman did the other night, Miss Jew. I'd believe anything of her, Miss Baker. She would not eat a bite of supper, because her feelings had been hurt over something. But she went into the pantry before she went to bed and ate up a lunch I had left for the poor doctor. Every crumb, Miss Jew, dear. I hope you will not think me an infidel, Miss Jew, but I cannot understand why the good Lord does not get tired of some people. You must not allow yourself to lose your sense of humor, Miss Baker, said Rebecca Jew firmly. Oh, I am very well aware that there is a comical side to a toad under a harrow, Miss Jew, but the question is, does the toad see it? I am sorry to have bothered you with all this, Miss Jew, dear, but it has been a great relief. I cannot say these things to Mrs. Doctor, and I have been feeling lately that if I did not find an outlet, I would burst. How well I know that feeling, Miss Baker. And now, Miss Jew, dear, said Susan, getting up briskly, what do you say to a cup of tea before bed? And a cold chicken leg, Miss Jew? I have never denied, said Rebecca Jew, taking her well-baked feet out of the oven, that while we should not forget the higher things of life, good food is a pleasant thing in moderation.